Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conaway, founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC. And I have to tell you, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably, and also helping to create this amazing thing that we call Startup Hustle. So we are extraordinarily grateful to Fullscale.io. They do an awesome job. So today's guest, I'm super excited because, you know, we always do the pre-show warm-up, and I love talking to guests before we even start recording, just learning more about what makes them tick. And I have to tell you, today's guest, we've been laughing pretty much the whole time we've been talking. So I just feel like this is going to be a really, really fun conversation. But we have with us today, Sarah Hum, and Sarah is founder of Canny. And she's going to tell us about that. But thank you so much for being on the show, Sarah. I'm excited.
Thanks, Lauren. It's great to be here. Just a quick intro. Yeah, I'm stoked.
I would love to hear about you. I would love to hear about Canny. Just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about what you're doing these days. What are you up to?
I'm Sarah. As Lauren said, I'm founder of Canny. And my personal background is in design. I'm a product person at heart. And evidently, I don't know, our product itself is very product focused. We serve product managers. Canny is a SaaS company. We help other software teams collect, manage, and understand feedback so they can prioritize, you know, the most impactful projects. And we're primarily B2B, so business to business. We have customers like Compass, Circle CI, ClickUp, stuff like that.
That is awesome. And so I want to call this out here really quickly. And I want to ask you, so you say that you are a company for product managers, which I think is awesome.
But you
as experts, you've actually launched a podcast recently, haven't you?
And we have, yeah.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's called PM Chats, so Product Manager Chats. And it's literally just like this. Like, we want to have casual conversations with product managers, and they tell us about kind of how they do product management, kind of their struggles, their successes, and stuff like that. So it's the kind of podcast we like to listen to, and we try to create, you know, something similar just in the product management space.
That is awesome. Well, congratulations. That is not not an easy feat, starting a podcast, and we speak from experience.
Yeah. We've learned a lot. A lot already, and it's just, I guess, season one.
For sure. Well, just so you know, listeners, you can take a look at the PM Chat podcast. There should be some info in the show notes for you, so definitely give it a listen. So I want to ask you, I think one of the coolest things that you do, you said that you help people track customer feedback and that you, mm-hmm. you help them understand feedback. So tell us a little bit more yes. about that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of software companies, right? Like naturally their customers will give them feedback. You know, they're trying to do something sure. that they can't. There's certain friction to something that they're trying to do. And so you'll start getting feedback as a small company, you'll start getting emails or live chat or whatever you use. And over time it becomes, there's more and more volume, right? And the natural solution I think that people veer towards is a spreadsheet. And they'll kind of start putting things into a spreadsheet. Okay, this many people have asked for this. This is very high priority, whatever it is. Yeah. Once that becomes a problem, that's when people look for solutions like Canny, where we can actually bring that feedback all into one place. You know, it's very visible across the entire company. There's a lot of transparency between the product and the customers. We're trying to bring those two groups together. Yeah. I think that that is very, you know, prevalent in how Canny came to be, because I, as a user, will be giving feedback to, like, I don't know, consumer apps like Yelp or Uber or whatever it is, and nobody would listen to me. And over time, we just realized that feedback is a hard problem. It's not that people don't care about my feedback. It's that, especially at scale, it's really hard to manage and understand and really be able to pull insights out of. And so that's the core problem that Canny's trying to solve.
Yeah. Well, so you, I think you made a really, really powerful point. And I don't know if you know that you made that point, but one of the things that, you know, we've kind of talked about, and I when I'm looking over like Canny's information, one of the things that like jumps out at me is the fact that the service that you offer, you're not just like collating and correlating feedback, but what you're actually doing is you're helping organizations make better decisions. You know, if you yes. have, yeah, if you have a customer, or I'm sorry, if you have 20 customers who are all clamoring for the same thing, mm-hmm. you know, knowing that empowers you to do something about it, right? So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, and especially like in the B2B space where people are paying money every month to buy a product that solves a problem for them, right? Yeah. If I'm going to pay for your product, I really want your product to solve the problem you told me you're going to solve. And so right. if there's something that is preventing me from doing that, I will give you feedback and say, hey, like, I want to do this, or I'm trying to achieve that. And so that's, yeah, like we're trying to really give them this place where there's feedback in one place. And sure. I can look at it and be like, these are the main things that our important customers care about and we should consider solving.
Yeah. Well, so tell me this, because I'm really, I'm fascinated by by this concept, because I think that customer feedback, like, that's the most powerful form of response that you're ever going to get. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, I imagine that a lot of customer feedback might potentially be negative. You were talking about friction points earlier.
Oh, for sure.
The fact is, like, if things are going great, not a lot of people raise their hand and say, hey, great job, well done. Mm-hmm. But so talk to us a little bit about the insights that customers have gained. Like, what are mm-hmm. some things that people are discovering about their customers? Like, you know, we've already kind of talked about customer wants a feature or something like that. Mm-hmm. But what other kinds yeah. of insights do you glean?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the main one, is feature requests, right? Is over time you're using Zendesk and your support team is getting, you know, clobbered by all this feedback. How do you actually, you know, quantify and look at it in a way where you can say, these are the things that we should be prioritizing. So that is a really common use case, is feature requests. Over time, you know, there's use cases even within a company. Let's say your company has 2,000 people. Those people are going to give you feedback too. That might be on internal tools. That might be on even like, where should we go for our team retreat? You know, it could be anything. And the Canny mechanism, how we help you put that feedback together, allows that flexibility. But in the main use case, yeah, that's feature requests and making sure that everyone who's requesting the same thing kind of gets bucketed together. But that also doesn't mean that if I request a certain feature, if I request a dashboard or whatever, that doesn't mean that's what we should build. I think that's one of the important things to mention here is like customers often will say, oh, I want this feature. The problem between all these feature requests is that there's an underlying problem. And that's kind of what the PM's job is to look at and say, okay, they requested this, but the problem is actually that, and there are X, Y, Z other options in terms of what we could build to solve that problem. So, I mean, our job is to just bring those problems to the surface, right? And make sure that your team is aware of these things and gives you a way to, you know, solicit more feedback if you want it. Talk to these people one-on-one if you want to do that. Whatever it is, just make feedback more manageable and not kind of this thing that nobody wants to touch because there's just so much of it.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So I have a question. Have you ever heard of the 7Y rule? Have you ever heard of that?
I think I might know what you're talking about. Like the why.
Well, so I'll go ahead and break it down for our listeners at home. So the point is when you're looking at a problem that has been presented to you, you're supposed to ask 7 whys to get to the actual root of the problem, because often the problem that you think you're having is not the problem that you're actually having. So as a, for instance, you know, okay, the problem is we need a wet floor sign. Well, why? Because there's a puddle on the floor. Why? Well, because there's a hole in the roof. So really the problem that you need to actually correct is the hole in the roof. It's not actually the leak on the floor. And so, so you're kind of providing that sort of mechanism. Like you see the problem, that's the start of the pipeline. But then when you're working with like BAs and you're working with, you know, customer advocates or whoever your internal teams are, what you're actually doing is you're helping to identify the problem so you can solve the greater problem, the precipitating problem.
Yes, that is perfect. And yeah, it's still like, we're not going to replace product managers. That's not what, I don't think we can do that. It's like, what data can we present to them for them to be able to realize that there's a hole in the roof, you know? And so, yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to do here.
That is awesome. I love that so much. I have a very tactical question and then I have a slightly less tactical question. So what are your sources of feedback? Like you mentioned, you know, Yelp. So like customer reviews, survey, like where are you pulling the data from?
Yeah. So what Candy provides is kind of this feedback portal where the idea is that you put a link to feedback in your site. So imagine, you know, you're building Salesforce, right? And in Salesforce, there's a link to feedback, right? I'm using Salesforce. I'm a user. I experienced this weird thing with Salesforce. Where do I go? Ideally, it's in like a help menu or, you know, some kind of obvious place. And then when I click on feedback, that opens basically the Candy portal. And that's where I can get feedback directly. So that's one of the main channels. And then the other one is, this one's super important, is where is feedback coming in already, right? And that's places like live chat, places like, just support, help centers, stuff like that. And so we make sure we integrate, you know, with Zendesk, with Intercom, with these kind of top tools that people are using to interface with their customers already. And that then empowers support people, customer success people, whoever's interfacing with the customer directly, salespeople, to translate basically that feedback into Candy. And so at the end of the day, product managers have all that feedback, whether it came from the portal or the integration, some kind of integration side, it's all in Candy.
That sounds super powerful. So what has the feedback been from your stakeholders thus far? Like you have your product managers, you have your customer advocates, the organizations that you work for, internal teams. Like talk to us a little bit about some of the feedback that you've gotten on the Candy, you know, system and software.
I mean, like product managers and support people definitely, like they're already feeling the problem. And so once they have a solution, it's really cool. But what I think is the most magical is when their customers really like Candy.
Yeah.
And they have a great experience using Candy through this other tool that they're using. Like, wow, the way you collect feedback is amazing. And that's powered by us. And so that is really rewarding to me is when users feel like the Candy magic, even though we're not talking to them at all. They're just using Candy as a tool. So that kind of feedback has been really, it's been really nice to hear.
Does it help keep you going? I feel like,
yeah, I mean, like just seeing their like tweets at these, at our customers or their replies on their feedback. It's just like, we enabled that, you know, it feels really good. Yeah.
That is awesome. And I love that you speak about it in terms of empowerment. Like, you are empowering companies mm-hmm. to make better decisions. You are empowering customers to share their feedback in a meaningful way. Because I don't think there's anybody out there who has not, you know, made a complaint to some company, and you just know that you are screaming into the void. Nobody's going to do anything about it. There is a person who's just listening to you to get you off the phone, you know,
get your ticket, you know, close your ticket.
Exactly. They just want it off of their desk. But what you're doing is you have created a system by which that feedback becomes more meaningful because it's being actively.
Yeah, it's a loop.
Yes, exactly. I love that. That is absolutely amazing. So can I ask you where the inspiration for Canny came from?
Yeah. I mean, that's literally it. It's like, we were giving feedback and it was like, oh, pass it on to the team. That means it's right. Not going anywhere. and that just felt bad. And yeah, we realized after talking to more companies, it's like, you know, we appreciate the feedback, but it's just, there's so much of it. You're not the only person giving us feedback, obviously. And so Canny aims to make that manageable. And that is, at the end of the day, the users hear back from the product team because we enable feedback at scale. And so it's just peace of mind for everyone in the loop. I think like as a user, you see your feedback is tracked. It's somewhere, at least it's logged and it's not passed on to the team, whatever that means. And so,
lost in the ether, like that feedback, that ain't going anywhere.
And that's the nice thing is I think that's like all end users' expectation. And so when we can go above and beyond and give them Canny and have them experience Canny, that just kind of blows their mind, which is really cool.
Yeah, that is super cool. So let me ask you this. We're all about strong teams around Startup Hustle. So how does your team respond to Canny? I'm just very, very curious. I'm sure, you know, being a startup, you have to have some pretty passionate people, but what kind of feedback do you get? I'm going to get a meta here for a second.
Yeah, for sure.
What kind of feedback do you get on the feedback tool from the people taking the feedback?
Yeah. the nice thing is that pretty much everyone on the team has experienced this before. You know, we're all software users. We've worked on other product teams. They all know the problem. And so that's really nice because whenever people apply, they're like, yeah, I've experienced this. Like, I know how this feels. And so everyone on our team is the same thing. And when we build new features, it's really nice because a lot of the time we're just building things for ourselves. And we're able to say, okay, this would be really helpful for our team. So it must be helpful for other teams. And so that would be totally different, right? If I was building accounting software or something, like we can really empathize with our end user and dog food our own stuff, which is super fulfilling. But everyone across the team has experienced feedback in some aspect. Everyone totally resonates with it and understands like the core problem that we're solving, which is super important for marketing, for sales, for everything. So it's great all around.
Well, and honestly, like I feel like some of the best products out there are those that answer an ill that the founders and the original teams, like when you're solving a problem for yourself, you're going to come up with a really strong solution. I love that your team is able to translate because your team, you're experts in product management. You know, you got the podcast, you have the years of experience behind you. You're experts in product management. So who better to create this tool? I can't think of anybody.
Thank you.
And when we're talking about people who are ready and set up to help you create awesome tools, I would be remiss if I didn't mention fullscale.io, by the way. They are there to help you join your team, be a part of your team, and help you help you build software quickly and affordably, help you build out your software development teams. They're going to be there with you every step of the way to help you do what you do better, which is what Canny does. Canny helps you do better. I feel like if you wanted to put that on the business card, that would be okay with me. I only expect a little bit in royalties. Just saying.
Noted.
Okay. You get back to me on that. So let's hop right into it. So one of the things that I want to ask you, and this is actually, I'm taking a little bit of a different tack because I feel like it. Unfortunately, you're at my whim right now. So there. So my question is, how did you get involved in product management as a field?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a product designer, right? And so I've worked with product managers a bunch. I know what a good product manager is able to do, and I know that bad product managers actually just get more in the way of things. Yeah. And so while I don't personally, I have never had a product management title, like I've worked with them, and I know what that means. And I guess I'm technically our product manager at Canny now. We only have 10 people, and half our team are engineers and other product people. So I'm kind of sitting in that position right now. And I've learned a lot just from doing that. Yeah.
So do you get to kind of act as translator between your engineering teams, like technical teams, and your more customer facing teams?
Totally. And I don't know, I've like being able to pull from my design experience too is really helpful because I've done, you know, user interviews before. I've been able to translate, you know, feature requests into features. And that's kind of what I do all the time now. And we've been running Canny for, you know, about 4 years. And yeah, it's super fun and it's super rewarding to ship things that our customers were really pining for. So yeah, I guess I am a product manager now.
Congratulations. Like you didn't need to know. You need to add it to the resume.
Exactly.
Well, so you just said something really interesting to me, and I'm gonna follow it a little bit. So you talked about you've done customer interviews before, and I think for our listeners at home, you know, right now we're talking about understanding customer feedback, which I think is the core. And there are a lot of startups out there, and there are a lot of founders and entrepreneurs who, either struggle to collect that data or they struggle to synthesize it and do something with it because it's overwhelming. Like there's a lot. So the question I'm going to ask you, when you're conducting customer interviews and you're trying to get at like the crux of the issue on functionality, it could be design function, you know, whatever it is. What are some powerful questions you can ask customers to get really good responses, like help them direct thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like the 7 W's or 7 Y's that you just mentioned, like I think it's important to have just really open-ended questions and not leading questions, right? It's just like, just keep asking why. And a lot of times they'll just have to kind of keep digging and really kind of get to their own point themselves. And so, yeah, it's just about leaving the problem, I think, open-ended and really understanding the thing they're trying to achieve. And then from there, it's like, is that what we're trying to help people do? When it comes to our offering, like we're not going to build everything that people ask for. That's just not how building a good company works, I think. Right. It's really like understanding what is this person even, you know, a key customer of ours? Is this a use case that we want to support? Yeah. And I guess that comes into thinking about product vision and stuff like that. But as a researcher, I think it's, just keeping the question open-ended and getting them to speak out loud. And if you're looking at specific user flows and like, what are they trying to achieve? What's kind of going through their mind? And then just continue clarifying until you get, okay, that is the problem. We know what it is. Yeah.
Okay. No, I love that. And I love that you even mentioned, you know, being selective. Small organizations in particular, you know, you can't do everything that people want to throw at you. And, you know, you might have one or two people over here who think this is a great idea. And then you have 20 over here mm-hmm. who thinks something else is yep. a great idea? And like, how do you yeah. serve the highest number of your customers, your clients, right?
But another thing I want to add there is like 20 people could be free users and 2 people could be enterprise customers, right? Yeah. And so that is also interesting because you don't want to just follow how many people have asked for a certain thing. You want to make sure yeah. that you know who these people are. And that's the important thing about Canny is when you give feedback in Canny, you can't do that without an identity. Mm-hmm. And so every piece of feedback we get in Canny is we know the person and we know the company they work at and we know how much they're paying us and we know any other information that we want to send into Canny. Like, you know, they've been a customer for this long. They've collected this much feedback. And those are important things, right? Is you can have a really popular post, but it could be people that don't matter.
Serious. Like, everything matters, but the people who maybe aren't your core demo, yeah. maybe the people who there's another product that will work better for them. You kind of mm-hmm. need to focus on. So if you know Canny's target is large enterprise size organizations, like yeah, we give more weight to people who represent yes, exactly. those entities rather than the folks who, you know, they own the small shops with revenue mm-hmm. under X amount, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The point is like you can't really just blindly follow the numbers, right? The number of votes on something. Yeah. It's really important to dig into the data and still like do your PM job, you know, like really dissect it and understand who the people are behind the ideas.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, I love that you talk about being selective, but really what that piece comes back to is really understanding your target customer, you know, mm-hmm. doing those user personas and then figuring out like who your core market is and then figuring out ways to better serve them by using mm-hmm. the feedback that you receive, mm-hmm. right? So that's kind of the workflow here. We know who our customer is, we listen to their feedback and we create products for them to solve their pain points.
Yeah. You can't solve everything for everyone on the planet, right? Like you need you need to focus. You need to identify what's most high impact and go there. Yeah.
Yeah. That is actually some of the more powerful advice I've ever heard on Startup Hot, because I'm like, yeah.
That is so nice.
That's true.
I think about this stuff every day.
I love all of that. Okay. So let me ask you this. What do you see in Canny's future? You know, 5 years, 10 years, couple years down the road?
Yeah, it's hard for me to think 5 and 10. It's pretty much impossible. I mean, we're a bootstrap company. Like we really take things day by day. We have no idea what the market is going to look like in 5 or 10 years. So we really plan like quarterly and kind of take a look at that. But in general, like I think just serving more PM problems, I think is where we're going. Like we started pretty much on the feedback side, right? Like we were very focused on the feedback side, but now it's like, what do you do after you have this feedback? I mean, a lot of that looks like prioritization, right? Is like, you have all this feedback, now what should we actually work on? And so we're building a lot more tools to help product managers really say, our team should prioritize this because of that. It's a flow, right? It's a story. Feedback comes in, it gets prioritized, it goes out and it gets announced, and it just kind of keeps spinning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you mentioned, I'm going to hone in on something I think you just kind of like flippantly mentioned, but I want to follow it. So you mentioned bootstrapping, and I want to talk to you about that a little bit because I think one of the, so for our listeners at home, you know, when I'm looking over the information on the company, when we're about to do these podcasts, sometimes I get to see guest suggested key messages. And I'm actually going to take this moment and I'm going to share the guest suggested key message for this episode. And it is, you ready for this, folks? It is, bootstrapping is great because we get to be our own bosses. Read flexibility, freedom. And so I'm gonna make you talk about that. Like, tell us
Do
more.
It.
Tell us more about bootstrapping.
I mean, it's becoming more and more of a thing, right? Indie hackers, stuff like that. And I love just seeing people like take their lives into their own hands. I don't know. I worked at Facebook. I was from the Valley, like peak Silicon Valley, VC, all of that stuff. And when I quit my job, I was like, I want to go travel the world. How can I do that while building a company? Do we need to raise money? Like, we were product people. We were very capable of building out the product ourselves. All we needed was a laptop. We could do that from anywhere in the world. As long as we can have a Wi-Fi connection, we're good. No investors kind of looking over our shoulder, asking us for our metrics. It's just, I would not do it any other way. I think one of the big things is when you bootstrap, you need to make money eventually. And if you're making money, that means you're solving a problem, right? So it validates you as well. And over time, like, I've been able to figure out my own life. Our team is fully remote and everyone else jives with that kind of spirit. We're just our own bosses and we get to do whatever we want and we get flexibility, freedom. My commute is 10 seconds down the hall. I guess COVID just is the same, makes that the same for everyone. But we were remote before COVID and yeah, it's just, I love it.
That's amazing. And I'm sure that we have some listeners at home who, like, when you said you don't have investors looking over your shoulder, like, that totally resonated. You were like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Like, I don't think I've built a pitch deck.
Yeah. Like, fair. So I'm going to ask you this because I do feel like one of the reasons that it's not a bad thing to have investors looking over your shoulder
is
because they hold you accountable. And because sometimes you have investors who can offer some really, really strong insight into an industry or a sector, or they can, you know, they investors, they often know what they're talking about. They've seen things a time or two. So talk to us about that kind of support. Like, where did you find that in your bootstrapping journey?
I mean, again, luckily, like, we've come from this field, you know, we're building a tool that we felt a lot of personal attachment to. And so we were able to draw a lot from our personal experiences and stuff like that. I mean, we can reach out to, like, people are friendly, just reach out to them. And a lot of them are willing to help. We should have used that more now that I'm looking back on it. And I'm really fortunate that the first company I've founded has made it as far as it has. But yeah, if you're starting a new business right now, like, I would definitely reach out to your network. If you don't want investors, there's a lot of really smart people that are just willing to help. Like, shoot them a message and you'll be surprised, like, who is willing to have a chat. And you don't need to give away a piece of your company.
Yeah, I will say, and this is something that I've talked about on my episodes multiple times. Like, we talk about mentorship a lot because I'm just a huge proponent of mentorship. And I'm like, the fact is, like, when I have people reach out to me and they want to, like, pick your brain over coffee, I just did air quotes around pick your brain, just so y'all at home know, but they want to pick your brain over coffee. Like, the fact is, I have never, not once have I gotten upset at somebody asking that of me. Like, I have never been offended. I have now there have been times when I have been forced to say no, you know, but, you know, for whatever reason, like, hey, you know, I appreciate it, the outreach, but I just have to be really super heads down right now. You know, maybe in a few weeks, a few months or what have you. But I do think, you know, for those playing at home, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Just ask. Like,
what do you have to lose?
What's the saying? Like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
So cool. You know, how does you said something else. You keep saying interesting things.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You said something else interesting that I like. This is your first company.
Yeah.
And you have 10 employees. You've been successful. You're like starting new things. Talk to us about that. How does it feel to be a first time founder experiencing success?
Yeah. Like, day one, you know, we hear that stuff all the time, is like, most first-time founders don't succeed, and that's okay. You know, you'll get them the second time, third time, whatever it is. So we kind of went in with that attitude, like, okay, we're going to try this, but if it fails, no big deal. We can build the product. We don't have to invest a ton of capital into building the thing. And so let's just do it. We've made money that we can live on for a good amount of time. We kind of had really low expectations. I think that's kind of a big learning lesson here, is like, always keep your expectations low and you'll always be kind of impressed. I'm very, very grateful. And like the team, I think when you talk about accountability from investors, like, we did that for ourselves, you know, day one before we had anybody else, but now our team does that for us and we keep each other accountable. It's surreal, really. Just looking at our growth, I'm a pessimist, I feel like, at heart. I'm always skeptical that we'll hit our goal or stuff like that. We just always do. And I'm just like, ugh. Yeah, it's a great feeling.
That's amazing. You're over here, you're like founder, and you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, okay, right, start getting bad, and then you just keep going.
Yeah.
Like, that must be so weird, but like in such a beautiful sort of way. Well, and I love what you said about your team holding you accountable. Would you say that you're close with your team? It sounds like you are.
Oh my gosh, unbelievably so. Even though we're remote, right? And before the pandemic, like, we tried to bring everyone together in a remote city 3 to 4 times a year.
Yeah.
And it's just because we invest, like, we find so much value in knowing each other and just hanging out and having a drink, whatever it is. And that just really enables us to work really well together. And we know each other very personally. So yeah, I've very intentionally kept our team really small. We do a lot with the little that we have, and I think that's how we want to keep it.
That's cool. I love small teams myself, because there's definitely a family vibe. When you're in the trenches with a smaller group of people, like, and you're surviving the same stuff and you're dealing with the same shit and you're going through it all together, and you're achieving things. You're doing good work.
100%. Yes.
Like, so there's the bad stuff and then there's the really good stuff. And you do that with like a small group of people, you cannot help but fall in love with them a little bit. You know, that iconic kind of, you are my people. I understand you. Yes. I know your experience. I love that. Exactly. That is awesome. Well, so talk to us. You know, we kind of talked about the long-term plans for, we talked about the long-term plans for Canny. Sorry, I had a brain fart. but we talked about that. What about long-term plans for you? You mentioned that you like to travel.
Oh, I'm so sad that we haven't been able to for the last year plus. But yeah, we did 2 years of travel. We did, I think, 26 cities or something in 2 years. And that was amazing for me. But at the same time, like, for my co-founder, it's a little different. And we're also a couple, which is another topic. Work and life are I know, work and life are very meshed together over here. But for him, he's just like, he really values, you know, routine and stability. And so I'm not sure we're gonna do the same thing, you know, or as intense, where we literally live out of a suitcase. But I would still love to just, you know, take the team on retreats and really just hang out, especially after the year and whatever, a year and a half now that we've had. But yeah, for the foreseeable future, our home base is now Toronto. I got a dog now we're like not traveling. So I'm like, we need to get a dog. Thank you. Yeah. She's the best. We value work-life balance a lot. It's kind of cliche now, but like, we do. I do a lot of things outside of work, and work enables me to have that space and time to do other fun things. So yeah, for me, it's just keep doing what I'm doing. Have fun on the side.
Nice. You know what? I feel like that is a pretty fantastic goal. Like, just keep doing what I'm doing, have fun on the side. Like, that.
Yeah,
that's going on my business card.
Perfect.
Well, so you said a couple of things. I had a human question in my mind.
Yeah.
It was there, but then you said something else that was interesting to me. So now I have to think about which question I want to ask. Because I was going to ask, like, all right, if you could travel anywhere today, where would it be? But I think I want to talk about your dog.
Yeah.
What's your dog's name?
Her name's Emmy.
Emmy. Where did that name come from?
Oh my God. We just thought about it for so long. Or I thought about it for so long. I was like obsessing over it. She's from Korea. And so I was thinking it had to be like a Korean kind of name, but nothing just sounded right. Like Kim, like I don't want to name my dog Kimchi, you know? It just kind of popped into my head.
But okay.
It is. But it's also like, really? And so I didn't do that. And it just, I don't know. I was just sitting at my desk and it just popped into my brain and it just felt right. And that was honestly funny thing, like similar to Kent, how we came with Kenny too. We were thinking about names all over the place. And when we heard Kenny, it was just like, that just sounds right. And we just went with it.
I like that. Yeah. Well, and Kenny has another meaning, because like I believe one of the meanings is like having it, so you have uncanny but then you have canny, and it's about
opposites. I don't believe they're opposites.
But it's, I mean, it's about knowledge and it's about like when something is
decisions,
you have like esoteric nut. There you go, look at it, all
boom,
back around.
It fits
amazing.
So well.
I love that so much. And I'm very happy for your dog, Emmy. Although I feel like in my head, Emmy now has the middle name of Kimchi. I'm just saying. But that's okay. You only use the middle name when you're mad. So, because I have a dog, it's Wakia Bear Conaway when I'm pissed at her. It's Kia.
Oh my God. The last name. I love it.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, Sarah. Like it's been fun chatting with you. I love your grasp of customer feedback and data and all that. Like, thank you. Just thank you. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Honestly, I just love casual chats anyway. It doesn't feel like I'm on a podcast, you know? And so I enjoy myself. Thanks, Lauren.
Good. I am so glad to hear that. Also glad about today's episode sponsor, and that would be today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. And they do a lot of really amazing community work, including leading Startup Hustle. So we love Fullscale.io. You know, another thing that we love when our listeners come back week after week and listen to the Startup Hustle podcast. We are very grateful for you, and we will catch you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.